A century ago, Upton Sinclair opened the door to the meatpacking facilities of Chicago with his novel, The Jungle. Consumers did not like what they saw. Ever since, it's been a tug of war between producers and consumers over the knowledge of how food is grown, processed, packaged, shipped, and eaten. This tug of war leads us to ask, who should control what may be known about food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned to the 1026th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way over there and way down there in Montevideo who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. But whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Jason, hello.
It's a pleasure, sir.
Folks, knowledge is power. Not too long ago, most everyone lived on the land and so had an intimate knowledge of food. Then most everyone moved into town and lost their knowledge. For many, if not most, food is simply that which comes in pretty packages from the supermarket. Imagine the surprise, then, when someone comes along with the knowledge of how food is actually produced and says, "Psst, look at how they're treating the animals." This note and tell journalism got its start in 1906 with Upton Sinclair's novel, The Jungle, and continues to this day in clandestine videos pirated out of the nation's confined animal feeding operations. To protect their brands from the prying eyes of the public, many producers have sealed themselves off with high fences and protective laws, like ag-gag laws that prohibit the taking of clandestine videos and anti-labeling laws that preclude country of origin or GMO labeling. Though the high fences and protective laws may hide the knowledge of how food is produced, it does not seem to stem the desire of many consumers to gain that knowledge so they can decide for themselves which food they want to eat. This tug of war over knowledge leads us to ask, who should control what may be known about the food we eat? Well, here to help us shop for an answer, we have some very interesting people, starting with Maisie Gansler, who is the Vice President of Strategy for Bon Appetit Management Company. Welcome to the Food Chain, Maisie.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you aboard. What is Bon Appetit Management?
Bon Appetit Management Company is a food service company, meaning that we run cafes and catering for corporations, private colleges and universities, and museums.
And the Vice President of Strategy, what does she do?
I get to do all sorts of fun things as I oversee culinary, marketing, communications, purchasing, and our nonprofit. And we serve about 200 million meals a year in 33 states. So you can imagine that we get ourselves into a lot of interesting areas.
You would be the ultimate consumer then.
I think that I'm a consumer in two ways. One is, of course, as a person, and we have to always remember that we all eat and we all make our own personal decisions. And then, yes, I am setting purchasing strategy for our 14,000 employees and those millions of guests that we serve each year.
So when it comes to buying food, you're really looking at what's in the food.
I'm looking at what's in the food. I'm looking at where it came from, who was involved in the process of growing, harvesting, and transporting it, and what it's going to do for the well-being of the people who consume it.
And who pays the way at your organization there? We always ask that question. Bon Appetit. Who pays the way there?
Who pays the way? Uh-huh. I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, who buys your product?
Well, we are in three lines of business. So it's either college students at private universities, university administrators, corporate employees at companies like Google, Yahoo, eBay, and then museum goers or people who attend San Francisco Giants games. We are at the home of the World Series San Francisco Giants.
So people who eat your food.
Absolutely.
Okay. good to go. Also with us today, we have Randy Krotz, who we're very happy to have with us today. We know that he went through some extraordinary feats to get here, so we're most appreciative. Randy's the first ever Chief Executive Officer of the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. Randy, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you guys. I appreciate the flexibility this morning.
Great to have you aboard. You're the first ever, right?
It's a 5-year-old organization, almost 5 years old. It's an alliance. It's a compilation of over 90 agricultural organizations, and from most of the industries that I think we'll talk about today, whether it's beef, pork, poultry, dairy, soybeans, corn. So we're very proud of the breadth of our partnerships that we have as an alliance. To jump out in front of you, Michael, the funding for our organization, over 70% of our funding comes from farmers and ranchers. And then we get about 28% of our funding comes from ag organizations and corporations.
Okay. Essentially, the people who grow the food.
Essentially, we are a board driven organization, and the vast majority of our board, 14 of our 17 board members, are producers.
Good. So we have people who produce the food, people who consume the food, and we have Roger Wasson, who has ideas about food because he's the proprietor of Wasson Idea Farming. Roger, welcome aboard.
Thank you, Michael. It's good to be here this morning.
Good to be here. Your idea of this show?
Well, you know what? It's something we do. My son Alec and I have a business called Idea Farming, and we work with food and agriculture across the country. And really, I think we've tried to dedicate ourselves to getting everybody at the table. Too often, it seems like people are picking sides and having to be kind of extreme one way or the other. And we think conversations should take place. And so that's what we do. And so I did encourage you to try to get folks together today, and I'm glad this is happening.
And we have two incredible parties, the producers and the consumers, which are kind of like the parties that have been at loggerheads, right? Playing a tug of war over the information about food. So that's what we're going to take on today and talk about. And I guess we'll start off with Maisie's editorial in the Des Moines Register. So get ready for this one, folks. Randy, you'll want to plug your ears, I'm sure. Maisie starts out, "Dear Big Ag, stop treating customers like they're stupid. There's a phrase I've often heard in my 20-year-plus-year career in business. If you don't want to read about it in the front page of the paper, don't do it. Yet we consistently see big food producers ignoring that advice. Instead of ceasing practices that the majority of consumers say they don't want, they double down on them. Big Ag tries to hide from public view, tells us they're wrong and that we don't understand farming or animal behavior science, or accuses advocates of using scare tactics to mislead the public." Maisie continues with the punchline. "Consumers want transparency so they can vote with their fork if they choose." So Maisie, what led you to make this statement in the Des Moines Register? It's a pretty profound statement.
Well, I spend a lot of time talking to producers and asking a lot of questions, and I spend a lot of time talking to guests and getting asked a lot of questions. And I feel that I sit at a place where I've got more information than most, and yet I don't get all the information that I want. And I feel that I'm constantly having to beg for the information that I want from producers, and being told over and over again that I don't understand, or I'm being tricked, or I shouldn't really want that information, and that it's not my business. And I feel, as a customer and as somebody who has customers, I should have all the information I want about the product that I'm buying and the product that I'm consuming.
That's probably a lot of information then, right, Maisie? Because you're a person that likes to have all the knowledge.
It is a lot of information, but I think that we're in an age of information. We can get online and Google anything. Yep. We can look at Wikipedia and see the history of any minute thing we're interested in. Why is food, why is the food system different than that?
Well, Randy, as the CEO of the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance, do you think that the ag community has not been forthcoming with the consumer community with respect to the knowledge about our food?
Well, I certainly, and not unexpectedly, and respectfully, very, very much disagree with Maisie's statement. I think producers in this country will let you on their farm, let you tour their farm, welcome you. I think she, from the Des Moines Register, actually received an invitation to tour a hog farm in Iowa. My position on that would be quite different relative to you started, Michael, with the fences around farms. I travel this country all the time. The only time you ever see fences around farms is where farmers are trying to care for their livestock and they're keeping check of diseases.
Okay, we're going to have to hold that, Randy. We're going to have to take a quick break. We will be right back. Folks, do stay tuned. The talk is on.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high value special crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at MetroFarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at MetroFarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-, 6-, or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at MetroFarm.com. That's MetroFarm.com.
Well, folks, here's a question for you. Who should control what we may know about the food we eat? Should it be the people who grow the food, or should it be the people who consume the food, producers or consumers? What do you think? That is the subject today, and we have all kinds of interesting people to talk about it. We have Maisie Gansler from Bon Appetit Management Company. And we have Randy Krotz from U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance, Roger Wasson from Wasson Idea Farming. Maisie, go back to you here. And you suggest that we're not getting enough information. Why do we want so much information? Why do consumers want to know?
I think people want to know about their food for positive reasons and for reasons of fright. On the positive side, farmers markets have become the town squares of today. You travel to other countries and there's a Zocalo or there's a church square that the whole community gathers in. And we lost that for many years in the U.S. I think farmers markets have replaced that. They've become areas that people come together, that kids play, that there's music and wonderful foods and this incredible sensory experience. And that leads people to ask questions as they meet their farmers and that they see the wide variety of sizes and shapes and flavors that food can come in. So I think that those are all fantastic reasons that people have engaged in the food system. On the other side, there are a lot of ills that can be related to the food system, both from an environmental perspective. According to the UN, the food system is responsible for 1/3 of global greenhouse gas emissions. It's a pretty scary statistic that would cause you to ask some questions. From a wellness perspective, we have unprecedented rates of diabetes, which can often be traced back to what we eat. So I think that we're concerned about how the food affects the environment around us as well as our personal well-being.
There you go. Well, Randy, do consumers want to know too much?
Oh, not at all. I mean, basically, I think the farms are open. The farms and ranches across this country are open. I think producers are more than ever ready to answer any questions. I think there is a confession to make in this process, though, that if you go back to the 50s and the 60s when farmers began to, you know, they came out of, particularly in the Midwest, maybe came out of the Dust Bowls and some of the hardest times after the ground had been broke and production had initiated, really you started into 50 or 60, 70 years of of pretty intense continuous improvement in food production. And that includes everything from better utilization of resources to increased yields per acre to better feed efficiency with livestock, better genetics with livestock. I think there was a gap, and obviously a gap, as people were moving off of the farm and that generational gap was increasing, that farmers failed to have the conversations that they needed to have. As we adopted some technologies, there could have and should have been more conversation with consumers around what those technologies were and the value of what it meant to food production, what it meant to the ability for the farmer to be sustainable, for their farm to be sustainable, and to improve the impact on the environment, which has been, just some of the technology that's available for farming. It's just been a wonderful path the last 25 years, but there wasn't enough consumer communication. That's what our organization's all about, is we're trying to bridge that gap.
Okay, well, let me just throw this to Maisie. You know, Maisie, when we left the farm, there were probably a great many of us who were very happy not to have to think about food for a while, because that's what we had always thought about for forever, right? What are we going to get to eat next? And all of a sudden, we didn't have to think about it. So maybe there was a kind of a wonderful, oh boy, I don't have to think about anything. I could just get it out of the supermarket and heck with it. Do you think that had a lot to do with our losing track there?
I think that did contribute, and I will confess, I don't want to farm, and I don't even garden. So I'm not suggesting that everybody should return to the farm, or we all have to have our hands in the soil to understand the food system. I think that there are people that want to do things away from the farm, and that's okay. But if we have a question about it, we should get an answer, and we should get a straight answer. And as the ag industry has started to have to answer questions, I think that they've put out some good information and some misinformation. And there's been some tactics about rebranding things, renaming, playing with words that maybe...
For example,
there's been a lot of talk in recent years about gestation crates in pork production. Well, somehow they're being called now maternity pens. Same crate, same size. The sow still can't turn around, but it's a maternity pen.
They must learn that trick from politicians.
Absolutely. Some of the same consultants. Yeah. I've had a producer recently tell me, what if we actually called them insemination stalls? Would that be better? Renaming it doesn't change the life of the animal. Mm-hmm. I'll give you another example, which I think is intentionally misleading to the public, and I'll name a name. Purdue, there's a commercial where Frank Purdue says that all of their hens are raised, all their chickens are raised cage-free and raised without hormones. Well, those two things are absolutely true, but nobody raises a broiler chicken in a cage. Broiler chickens are all raised in group house situations. Hens for laying eggs are in cages. And the FDA doesn't allow hormone use in chicken. Mm-hmm. So it's true, but is it helpful?
Well, Randy, isn't it your right to fight for how people see things?
Well, it is, and again, there's probably some discrepancy, I think, in the terms that she's laying out. And with regard to gestation and maternity, are actually representing two different times in the sow's life. So that's an important distinction. And again, we invite people out to farms to see why the methods the farmers use are used. I think that the challenge that you're bringing up around the hormone piece is one of the challenges for farmers. And if you get right down into it, right, hormones are not used in chickens. Marketing companies that market food, whether it's a restaurant brand or a further up the line in the production process, when they begin to market around terms like that, it causes us heartache as well as producers and poultry producers particularly, because if you look at some of these major brands, they're distinguishing their particular chicken with something that you know just simply doesn't make sense. They're trying to make it sound safer and therefore kind of demonizing other products. And I think the farmer gets caught in the middle of that. And I would still go back to, well, I think so. I think that, you know, farmers aren't out using hormones. We're not trying to communicate a distinguishing characteristic to consumers about hormones, but some restaurant chains do. So that's a difficult position for farmers to be in, something that we don't do.
You know, one of the interesting things about being a city person is that you really are at the whim of whoever's handing out information and who you want to believe. And so we tend to run in herds in one direction and then another. I just read an article about some products in a store, I think it was Whole Foods, that were certified GMO-free and charged much more for the same product right next to it that has no GMOs in it either. So we city people kind of, you know, flock here and there at whoever's pulling our chain with information. And I guess, how do we get enough information so we don't get our chains pulled all the time? That's the question. Where do we get our information today? And who do you think should control that information? Phone numbers today, if you'd like to participate, 831-479-1080. We have Maisie Gansler, VP of Strategy, Bon Appetit Management Company. Randy Krotz, Chief Executive Officer, U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. Roger Wasson, Wasson Idea Farming. And me, Michael Olson, right back. Question of the day, who should control what we may know about food? Should it be those who produce the food or those who eat the food? What do you think? 831-479-1080. Randy Krotz, Chief Executive Officer of the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance, you say that farmers are willing to and open to have people come out to their farms to see exactly the way things are growing. Which is great in my estimation, because I love being on farms anyway. That said, why is agriculture erecting all of these barriers to knowledge transfer via legislation, with such things as the elimination of country of origin labeling, with respect to the fight against the effort to label GMO foods? It seems like you're saying that one thing, and yet agriculture is doing the opposite thing. How do you respond to that?
Well, a couple things. And first, just a very quick follow-on to my previous statement around the information that's provided with regard to poultry. The reason some poultry manufacturers have to address hormone use in commercials is because of the noise that has come from, let's say, individuals, particularly in the social media spaces, or that have an agenda against perhaps meat or poultry consumption, that there's enough noise out there that, in your case, Maisie, you mentioned Purdue, that they have to address that in a commercial. So that's, I think, the reason you hear those things, is they're trying to address the noise that's coming through from some organizations. To address your issue around legislation, USFRA is not a policy organization, and that's important for us to mention, because we really want to just put the farmer in front of the consumer. That's our goal, farmer and ranchers interacting with consumers and with people in the food movement. Having said that, I think the organization, we have a very clear position on transparency. Specifically around GMO labeling, as an example, generally speaking, my position, and I think the organization's position as a whole around labeling, is that as people try to label GMOs, it's generally doing so to demonize the technology in some way. When you have 300 health organizations from around the world that say there's no health risk, that they're safe to use, and in fact they benefit agriculture greatly, they benefit the environment, at the same time, I think the organizations that are trying to demonize GMOs and for some reason paint big ag with this big black brush or you know, to darken our image in some way, I think is what we've seen there.
Well, that's an interesting thought. Is Maisie, is knowledge used to paint a bad picture about agriculture?
I think that there's certainly propaganda on all sides.
On all sides.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that the answer to that is less information. I think the answer to that is more information. And so it's not about not labeling GMOs. It's about labeling GMOs and providing a bunch of information and letting people decide.
Roger?
Michael, I think it's really interesting, and I think it's a really good thing that people want to know more and more about how their food is produced, and I really applaud a lot of what I'm hearing here this morning, too, because I think there's agreement that there should be more information provided and answer more questions. I think it's interesting that the top trends in supermarkets right now is to give consumers more information about responsibly produced. And when they predicted, you know, what is the biggest issue right now, it's that consumers want to know how their food is produced, and they want to trust who's telling those stories, that they're pulling back the doors. And that's why I think it's heartening to hear what Randy's saying. What they're trying to do is come out to the farm, see what they're doing. And I think what you're doing too, Maisie, is taking a look at it and encouraging everybody, and I think putting the pressure on to do that. But when I hear you talk about it, Maisie, I also can't help but note that some are doing it. I mean, you often point that out, that you're seeing changes and that you're seeing shifts taking place. And you're seeing more and more organizations that are responsive to what your consumers or your customers are saying that they want to know. And I think it's encouraging. You have to open the doors. I think there's more we can ask, too. I think it's
important. Do you think the anti labeling GMO laws are opening the doors or closing the doors?
I think that the GMO issue is an example of where people want to know more about how the food is produced. Mm-hmm. And I think the market is responding. There's been referendums, there's been state rules and so forth, the regulations. But you end up finding that certain consumers want to buy products that or know whether the product has GMO. And some of them are discovering that that's been available to them for a long time. They can buy certified organic if that mm-hmm. concerns them, and certified organic doesn't have GMO. So if that's a concern they have, there's an option that's been available to them right along.
You know, I wonder, with respect to when you try to withhold information, does that help your side or hinder your side? And I wonder about that with respect to the effort to eliminate states' rights to label GMOs. I mean, if you're a consumer, how do you look at that effort to limit your knowledge? Maisie, start with you on that one.
Just purely from a business perspective, and I do work for a business that has to attract guests and get them to spend their money with us, I don't think that you ever win from a business perspective by not giving people the information they want. I think that's a losing position. Whether you agree with them about why they want it or what they're going to do with it, I think it's a losing position to not give people what they want when you are a business.
But it may also be a losing proposition.
Go ahead.
It may also be a losing proposition to give them too much. Or to go overboard.
And there I think you go.
In that, like I think Randy made an excellent point with some that are saying we have product hormone-free. Well, it's all hormone-free. Or some are saying ours is non-GMO. Well, there's no GMO in any of this product, such as the salt, Michael, that you mentioned
sure,
earlier.
Sure, that's right.
So I think trying some restraint and balance and honesty and not trying to put too much spin on the ball is something that consumers are looking for.
Randy, do you think consumers can get too much information?
I don't. I think, you know, as I travel around the country, there's, you know, just menus and restaurants are a great example. And, of course, the aisles in a grocery store are more and more, you know, consumer information or production information at the point where the consumer can gather. We know that there is, particularly when you look at millennials, that obviously there is more information desired at the point of purchase. And again, you know, I live in St. Louis. I travel all over, and listening to conversations in restaurants about whether it's locally grown or whether it's organic, how it was produced, it's an exciting thing for a producer to hear. And actually, it's opportunistic for farmers to try to take advantage of some of those market segmentations that occur.
That's what I'm wondering. What a wonderful opportunity for agriculture to stand up and say, look what we've got going for you. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. Today we're talking about information. Who should control the knowledge of what we may know about the food we eat? Producers? Consumers? Should it be government? Who should it be? That's where we'll go when we get back. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson, Maisie Gansler, Roger Wasson, Randy Cross, and you. Do stay tuned. Right back. Well, there was a time way back when I was in grade school, they took us on a tour of the local meatpacking plant. And having been a farm kid, been raised around animal agriculture, the slaughtering and butchering of animals and the milking and all of that stuff, I kind of was aware of what happened. But when they took me through that meatpacking plant and I saw how they made hot dogs, I couldn't eat hot dogs again for a long time. A little bit too much knowledge there. And so we wonder who should control how much knowledge we have about the food we eat. We talk about openness and we talk about closedness, you know, the propensity of farmers to open their land and their farms to people so they can see what's going on. And yet the propensity to do pass legislation that prevents certain bits of knowledge from getting out. So I'd like to ask the big question to me is really, who should control the information and how much should we have? Maisie?
You started the question, the hour, by asking who pays your way. And I think the person who pays the way, which for all of us is the customer, should get to control how much information they want or don't want. And I am a meat eater. I have gone to factory farms. I have seen slaughter. I've seen it done well. I've seen it done in a way that I feel good about as a meat eater. It doesn't mean that if you get information, you're going to stop buying the product. Farmers shouldn't be scared of it.
So, do you think you should be in charge of the information?
I think I should be in charge of the information if I'm buying the product.
Randy?
I think farmers agree with that. I truly do. I thought that was very well put. The reality is that there are some farm practices that are sometimes hard to understand why they're utilized. I think as consumers have become more knowledgeable, that it's been a great experience for farmers and ranchers, and to see consumers make statements like Maisie just made around the understanding of whether it's livestock production or why we use certain types of seed in production or why we use confinement operations in certain situations. I think that, you know, opening the barn doors is a great way to go here, and I truly believe that farmers are having a great experience heightening the engagement. Whether it happens at a farmer's market, which of course is a limited venue for some across the country and limited in most parts of the country for the time of years that it can exist, or if it happens in a social media atmosphere or actually on a farm, you know, whether it's in Oregon or Washington or South Carolina.
I'm just going to add to that. I think they both made excellent points, but I think to add to that, I think it's important to know where it's grown and not only whether it's Wisconsin or Colorado, but what country around the world, too, because I don't think necessarily all countries have the same standards that we have. And so if I'm, as a consumer, I would like to know where it's coming from, mm-hmm. because it does vary from place to place, and some countries have so much pollution that the heavy metals in their foods are an issue. So there's a lot to know.
So that would be diametrically opposed then to the recent elimination of country of origin labeling by legislation of the federal government.
Well, I'm like Randy, and I'm not into policy either as far as trying to talk about legislation. I think it's an important thing to know. I think more and more of the market will try to identify, where the food is coming from.
Well, consumers certainly will, Maisie.
The reality of our food system today, which Roger speaks to, is that it is international, or at a minimum, national. Bon Appetit, all of our meat comes from the continental North America. But as a consumer in a restaurant or in a supermarket, we are often very far away from the production, and the transparency or lack thereof in the supply chain of not just country of origin, but where something was produced within the U.S., under what label, at what farm, makes it very hard for most consumers to ask questions directly of their producers. But there are people that are on those farms all the time, employees and neighbors. And that's where we get into the ag gag laws, preventing those people from filming and disseminating information about what's happening on farms. I think the Hallmark beef example was a great example of a widespread problem in terms of the downer cows, which posed a food safety risk that was going to many, many places where the consumers had no idea. And it was really about undercover video exposing that for all of us.
Randy?
Yeah, I think pulling back the curtain on any industry can often be a positive thing. It's also so important to recognize that farmers raise livestock, care for livestock in a very, very special way. And the incidences that have been put on the web are such a minute percentage
Sure.
of what goes on out there. I grew up on a hog and cattle operation. And I know how we cared for our animals, and I know how our neighbors have, and I know how members of our organization do. And we just have to be so careful here not to paint an industry with a behavior of just a couple of people.
So when we get back from this last break, I have the big question to me, which is, can agriculture allow for full transparency? I wonder, because when you give the knowledge to the consumer, you're really giving the power to the consumer. The consumer doesn't know you have the power as the producer. So it's really an entire shift in the power paradigm there. Right back. Well, we have so much to talk about and so little time to talk about it in. Got a notion about this information business, because to me, information is power, it's knowledge, it's money. If I go to the grocer and ask for a strawberry, the grocer can get a strawberry from anywhere in the world and say, here's your strawberry. But if I go to the grocer and say, I want a strawberry from the Swanton Organic Farm and Davenport, California, or wherever, then the grocer's stuck. He has to go to that farm and get that berry for me. So it's knowledge of food really gives power to the consumer. Can agriculture afford to give all that power to the consumer, Randy?
Well, I think technology may help get us there. I don't think there's harm with that. In any way, particularly when you talk about vegetables and crops of that nature, it becomes easier from a packaging standpoint when you're talking about a large crop like corn and soybeans, where that corn is grown and where that hog is fed. That becomes a little more difficult, I think, without question. Certainly, there's more and more certifications programs coming along that are meant to provide consumer information about how the hog is raised or how the corn is produced. So I think agriculture is racing to respond to the consumer desires for information, and I hope that we can work together. And I think farmers are trying to do it with open arms and open minds and hearts with regard to sharing information.
Maisie, are they racing fast enough for you?
nothing is fast enough for me. And I think we should give power to the consumers. And let me give an example in my own world. Most of our salad dressings are made using canola oil. And we have customers that ask questions about canola oil, some because of GMO concerns, some because there have been a number of articles that raise health concerns about canola. It's not for me to determine whether those articles are true or not. I also offer extra virgin olive oil. Make a decision as a consumer which one you want. Either's fine with me.
And there, if you have the information, you can make the decision. Roger, did you get the show you were looking for?
Oh, I think it's great. I appreciate you having this, and because I think there's an example here of that there's shared interest in trying to get answers and have it be open and answer questions. And hopefully consumers will keep listening to you, Michael, and raising questions that you do so that we can keep, you know, answering questions, showing how food is produced and that farmers don't have anything to hide. They want people to know about how they're producing.
And you know, the funny thing is, we sometimes forget in this tug of war how much we need each other. You know, because...
Well, and you need each other to be at the table. Whether that table is in a radio station in Santa Cruz, California, wherever it is, they need to sit down at the table. It's awfully easy now when you start doing homework to be polarized by what you see on the internet. You know, don't give up. Keep trying to get together and get your questions
answered.
Yeah,
without the producers, we city people would go mighty hungry. And without the mighty hungry city people, the producers wouldn't have anything to do. So there you are. So it's much appreciative today of Maisie Gansler, Bon Appetit Management Company, Randy Krotz, U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance, Roger Wasson, Wasson Idea Farming, and all you out there. Remember Michael Olson. I guess we can file this one under Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in that food. Thank you all for tuning in. Next week, more What's Eating What Radio right here on the Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.